I guess that's where I want to start with you, because you love the pop culture mashup.
Yes.
And why is that important to you?
For me, it's like things just collide and click.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. Thanks for subscribing, streaming, or downloading and listening to us on your computer or tablet or phone. I'm Austin Titchener, one third of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast, number 475, Our Poster Lartist. Lar D'Souza, known as at Lartist on Twitter, is the cartoonist and caricaturist who's created the poster art for our last three stage shows, The Ultimate Christmas Show Abridged, The Complete History of Comedy Abridged, and William Shakespeare's long-lost first play Abridged. We met Lar at the Shorty Awards in New York City, and we hit it off immediately due to our shared cultural sensibilities. And the importance of the pop culture mashup is where my conversation with Lar D'Souza began.
Being a child of media, growing up in the 70s, born in 63, so the Saturday morning television routine was actually hitting a reasonable quality. There were still plenty of old cartoons and stuff for me to just soak up like a sponge as a kid. And I saw, and it was more than that, it was editorial cartoons, it was magazine cartoons, it was magazine illustrations, it was... I think, you know, it starts with you wanting to draw your favorite characters, then drawing your own characters. And then for me, it's like things just collide and click. And it's my way of participating in things I enjoy. So drawing, you know, Bugs Bunny or Snoopy or whatever, and then making them say what I wanted to say as a kid, and then... Well, there's no reason they can't, you know, what do they do when they're off panel, when they're off stage, when they're off screen?
Right.
And I saw some other cartoons that did it, in the early 80s, late 70s, they had Fred Hembeck, who was a cartoonist who did some stuff for Marvel, and he had his own comic strip in magazines that were sort of like, after hours when all the superheroes go and hang out between panels. Or you'd see, Roger Rabbit and all the – you got that that sense in some of the Disney cartoons and some of the Warner Brothers cartoons that these were actors. You know, Mickey was playing a role. Bugs Bunny was playing a role. So there's no reason. It was like if a studio held somebody's contract and might loan them out.
Right.
So I think I grew up very much with that idea of the mashup. And like I said, it's my way of playing in that sandbox. I'll never get to draw Spider-Man. Touch wood would be nice. Hey, Marvel, I know you listen to Reduced Shakespeare. No, but, I don't do superheroes the way some people do. But I can draw Spider-Man on my own dime and have him go hang out with Batman.
Absolutely.
Or whatever. And that's fun. That just, it scratches an itch. It lets me participate in something I enjoy and show my enjoyment. I think just like if people go to a concert and sing along, mm-hmm. or they go to a play and they know the lines because they've seen it so many times.
Well, and I think there's some power in the fact that you put Spider-Man next to Batman, and now you've created something new. You've put Spider-Man into a new context, and you think, oh, interesting. a rodent and an insect.
Yeah.
That says something interesting and new in a weird way.
But also, when you watch some of these things, and let's face it, keeping to the heroes, fighting crime in spandex isn't the most sane choice to make with your life.
Right.
So, in the real world, like as a kid, and you want to be Spider-Man and realize, I live in suburbia. Right. There's nothing over three stories here. I would have to take a bus and a commuter train to go downtown to the business district of Toronto, where I have maybe a six-block radius where I could actually use spider powers.
Yes, the limited.
Doesn't work.
Exactly right. Spider-Man was not created by a child on the prairie. like exactly. like Superman was. Yeah.
See, there's a great that was the Marvel had the What If comics
right
back then, and every now and then they would get totally absurd, like what if Aunt May was the Herald of Galactus, the Destroyer, which was hilarious. Of course, it would make sense. She's tired of her life on Earth. Let's go explore outer space as a nice old lady with superpowers.
Indeed. Well, and you and I are roughly the same age. I have a few years on you.
Yeah.
And so we have the same pop culture references and a lot of the similar ones, although you're far deeper into the comic book nerdery than I am.
Yeah, but also, like, I mean, we just passed the Christmas season. And, you know, one of my favorite specials, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, I love it because of tradition, and I love it because I can't not also see all the assholery. I mean, Santa is like, oh, Donner, you birthed an abomination in the eyes of God and man. Cover up this child. Like, he's a horrible character.
He is.
But he's Santa.
I know. It's the it's almost as bad as the depiction of Father Christmas in the Narnia stories where
yes.
Father Christmas starts handing out weapons to the children. Well, and it's funny that you bring up Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer because it was your satirical poster art of Rudolph the Red-Rum Reindeer. It was specifically that pop culture mashup right there that made me think, oh my gosh, Lar should draw our poster for the Ultimate Christmas Show Abridged. And it was it was beautiful what you do. I have such envy of the visual artists because I love it and have zero skill in that area. And so when I see somebody like you who draws in so many different styles and in so many and with such seeming effortlessness, it's really, really amazing and beautiful to watch. Have you always been a cartoonist? Where did you train? How did the impulse begin?
I think I've always been a natural cartoonist. And thank you for such kind words. My oldest brother was actually, or I've got two older brothers, two older sisters. I'm the youngest of five. And my next oldest brother, we're about 2 years apart. So we were natural best friends. Mm-hmm. And he was the family artist. He was a natural cartoonist. And so I began imitating him. And he actually is an animator now, professional animator working in Vancouver. And I went up and became an illustrator. But I think my inclination as a storyteller, I guess, you know, being in a family where, you know, there were my parents both had lots of siblings. They emigrated up from Guyana to Canada. There were always stories. There was always talking about this or that relative or this or that thing that happened with a grandparent or a cousin or an aunt or an uncle. So I think I grew up in a family of storytelling and I enjoyed drawing illustrations for that. And cartoons were fast and funny. And I was the kid always drawing teachers and friends and it morphed into a career for caricature. And I think that caricature also lended itself to the mashups, being able to depict something accurately and well. And I realized that one of the benefits to sort of continually try to learn, to strive to improve, for me was by emulating styles I enjoyed, because the challenge is not to copy the final line. So many kids want to draw their Pokemon and they start with the final line instead of the process of building the shapes, of figuring out the proportions, the movements, the mechanics, so that hopefully I can learn something from emulating that Rankin-Bass Paul Coker style or that Warner Brothers style or that classic Disney style or that later Disney style or the 90s animation styles, so that I can get inside their head and figure out, okay, what did, you know, Hirschfeld use to get that lyrical line? What did Stedman use to get that frenetic, you know, energy line? What did George Booth use to get that scumbly, scrambly, tangled mess of lines and textures? I'm a real line junkie. And so by, you know, you can't study drawing just by looking at it. You've got to do it. So by copying the masters, as it were, and then trying to see what are their rules that I can incorporate in myself. Not just, you know, I like this, but why do I like it? And how can I benefit from that observation of it? How can I take something from their tool set and add it to my own skills to be one step better than I was yesterday?
Hey, it's Bob Goen.
And I'm Marianne Caran from Bob and Marianne Radio.
At Warm 98. And you're listening to the Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast.
Where can you RSC the RSC? This month, we'll be performing The Complete History of Comedy Abridged in Marietta, Ohio and Madison, Georgia, and The Complete History of America Abridged in Hillsdale, Michigan. In March, April, and May, we'll be touring to Allentown, Pennsylvania, North Andover, Massachusetts, Schaumburg, Illinois, Saratoga, Rancho Cucamonga, and Poway, California, Gillette, Wyoming, Reston, Virginia, and Somerville, New Jersey. And, of course, we'll perform William Shakespeare's long-lost first play Abridged at the Folger Theater in Washington, D.C., from April 21st to May 8th, 2016. As always, the very best way to stay up to date about all of our worldwide performance dates is to sign up for the Reduced Reader, our email newsletter. Go to ReducedShakespeare.com and click on the link to subscribe and check out our touring page for specific box office, venue, and ticket information. And now back to my conversation with the artist formerly and currently known as Lar D'Souza.
You mentioned Paul Coker Jr. and Al Hirschfeld. Your influences run from Mad Magazine to Broadway, and including pop culture and superheroes and comic books. You don't discriminate, do you?
No. I think that's really important. You know, I don't get, say, you know, some of this. Some of your modern art stuff here, you know, like your Jackson Pollocks and your
right.
Whatever. I mean, I have my opinions about Mr. Pollock. But, you know, I can look at a weird Picasso, say, and kind of go, I have no idea what's going on here. But I might say, but I like the colors. Mm-hmm. So if I like the colors, let me look at the colors. Let me say, you know what? That's a color palette that I could use. That's a color palette that's evocative. So I will try and remember that for down the road. And if I look at, you know, that abstract expressionism and kind of go, this does nothing for me, then it's sort of learning by a good, bad example of like, you know,
yeah.
I don't want to do that. I won't let myself do that.
Well, and I think it's important too what you said. It's the same for us in theater. I think it's true in everything. You don't learn by reading about it. You learn by doing it. You learn by practicing it. And it's whatever Malcolm Gladwell says. It's 10,000 hours of just practice. And when you look at a Picasso and you go, oh, I don't know what I'm, and you only see the colors. It's great. It's encouraging to hear you say that because I'm not a visual artist at all, and so I come to it with my own limitations and preconceptions. But I always try to go, what can I learn from that?
Yeah, I mean, it's the whole, you know, I don't know what art is, but I know what I like.
Right. Right.
But do you know why you like it?
Yeah.
The next step for the creative to say, what is it about that performance that moved me in an extra way? What is it about this piece of art or this book or this play or this piece of music that transcended it from meh to I like this to wow.
Right.
And you know, you don't have to be a professional, but I think if you are really into something, you know, you're into music, you're into whatever, you know, you naturally start picking up the names of the people or the, you know, start recognizing styles and twitches and individualities. One of the things I was lucky growing up in our public library was a big thick book called Classic Cartoons. And it just had like this plain cover. I have no idea what the original cover was. It had been recovered, but it was a collection of comics going right back to the Gibson era. And it had Gibson and it had Little Nemo and it had Stedman and Booth and I remember my first George Hirschfeld or Al Hirschfeld, I'm sorry, and being moved by that line. And it was the Gershwin brothers playing. And I can still see the curl of the fingers on the keyboard and the cigar going right into the nose and chin shape and the way the two figures kind of clicked together, and thinking, I got to learn how to do that.
Well, and that you're right, that the simplicity of a Hirschfeld, where he can convey all of that with a single seemingly unbroken line, is amazing. He hasn't actually drawn all the fingers, but you see all the fingers.
Yeah. I looked at that as a child and then later as a student and said, okay, I'm going to use a brush to get this thick and thin line. And so I practiced with a brush and I practiced with a digital brush. And I have some pride now in my thick and thin line variation. And then decades later, I saw the biography of his, The Line King, to actually see what did he do? What tools did he use? It didn't matter to me before what he used. I found what I was comfortable with, and I used them, and I made my own version. And I found out he used a very small dip pen and worked very large and would, with, you know, thousands upon thousands of tiny strokes, build up those lines. And then when it was reduced down, it got this beautiful liquid line. And looking at the cat going, well, thank God I never saw this when I was a kid, because I would try and do it his way.
Yeah.
And at the time, I hated dip pens.
Right.
I was horrible with dip pens. I think it has to do with being left-handed. And having bad instructor early on really turned me off of it. And I probably would have thought, oh my God, I can never do this.
But you found your own way. And ignorance is bliss in that case.
Yeah, I get people saying, what do I use? What software do I use? What pen is that you're using? What markers that, you know, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
What do you have? Do you have a stick? Do you have a bottle of ink? Do it.
Go for it. Well, and Al Hirschfeld, the work of Hirschfeld, influenced the two posters you did for us for both The Complete History of Comedy Abridged and now the latest one, William Shakespeare's long-lost first play Abridged. We came to you and we said, can you draw us in kind of a Hirschfeldian manner for the comedy show? Which you did, and it's amazing.
I had so much fun.
And then for the Shakespeare thing, you had the exact same idea I had, that of Shakespeare as a sort of conductor, and you used the same image that was in my head, which was Hirschfeld's drawing of George Bernard Shaw from the poster and the cast album of My Fair Lady.
Yeah. Well, you had sent me that as a reference, and it was natural.
Oh, good. Okay.
But yeah, that movement. Yeah. That conductor's grand gesture just flowed from it.
Well, I'm glad to hear you say that we shouldn't talk about equipment, because I was going to ask you about equipment, but you're quite right. Let's skip that, and talk a little bit about your not only are you a visual artist who uses pen and ink and digital software, et cetera, but you also use yourself as a template upon which to create art. Your look, your face, your beard. You have colored your beard for many charities. What is it about you? You look like somebody's perception of an artist. Is that important to you?
Thank you. No, it's not. but I thank you very much. I don't. You know, it's funny, when I went, I was studying chemistry in university, and everybody said, every time we come into your room, you're drawing. And I said, well, this is my downtime. It's like, maybe you should try art. And I said, okay, I'm going to try art. And everyone immediately said, because it was the 80s, oh, you're going to get one of those funny haircuts and an earring. And I'm like, no, like this isn't. But I guess, you know, there's a fearlessness, I think, that I've developed in my life as a cartoonist, as a caricaturist, as an artist, where my friends say I have no filters, and that's part of the reason why mashups happen. Everything just, something goes in the left ear, something goes in the right ear, and they collide somewhere in the middle and then come out in this kind of disjointed. And I think that's a kind of a, it doesn't sound disciplined, but it is a discipline, an effort to not stifle the ideas.
I think that's great. Live in the present. Don't edit yourself. Yes. Yeah. Yes. And don't overthink it.
Yeah. Yes. And I've heard that that's an improv thing, right?
Yes, it is. It's the,
so yeah, it's that kind of thing. It's like you have to be, I had this great chain smoking Scottish teacher in illustration back when you were allowed to smoke in college classrooms. And he would go through a cigarette every 6 minutes. We would time it. And he was such a creature of the 60s and 70s and, you know, played the sitar and cursed us in his work background, you know, blue collar brogue. And he came out of the slums of Scotland and, you know, advertising. But he was such an encouragement of you've got to constantly think. You can't say no because you may throw out something good. You know, by the time I, you know, if I get an idea, by the time I actually sit down, I've probably thrown away four.
Right. There's two great lessons in here that I can think of. Don't edit yourself until you absolutely have to. Mm-hmm. And also, whatever you love to do in your downtime, see if you can make that your living.
Oh, yes. I just, it's funny. I have not gotten much work done today yet because I had to, you know, I had to go out earlier to pick up my daughter. And then while I was out, I had to go to the Walmart to get some milk and groceries. And there were just too many damn people.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I came home and it's like, I need a mental health break. And so I'm drawing a cartoon. But it's not a work cartoon.
Nope.
It's a cartoon for me. And this is my downtime.
Well, and this is another great thing about social media, Twitter specifically, is that you sometimes share those cartoons on Twitter. And you say, these are just for me. But you're sharing with us because we might love them too. And we do. They're fantastic.
I very much subscribe to, you know, Sir Terry Pratchett's idea that ideas are like neutrinos. They're particles just sleeting through space. And they get stuck in people's heads.
Mm.
And, you know, a good idea is a good idea. You, I think, you know, you will see a cartoon I've done and kind of go, yeah, you know what? I made that connection too. I never drew it. I didn't write it. I didn't whatever. I may have mentioned it. But there are those connections that are happening to all of us. I just happen to have an outlet for some of them.
That's it for this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast. You can find more examples of Lart Souza's work by following him on Twitter at Lartist, on Instagram as Uncle Lar, that's UNCALAR, Uncle Lar, or at UncleLar.tumblr.com. Just this weekend, in the time between our conversation and this morning when I edited the interview, I suggested to Lar via Twitter the pop culture mashup Miley Coyote. And 2 hours later, he posted this completed artwork suggested by that idea online. You can see the final product on our Twitter feeds and at UncleLar.tumblr.com. Send us your pop culture mashups via email to feedback@reducedshakespeare.com. You can also engage with us and other fans on Facebook or Twitter, and I hope you'll post reviews of this podcast on iTunes. You can find easy links to all these social networks at our website, reducedshakespeare.com. Thanks, as always, to webmaster Matt Rippey, Mulan Calrissian Matthew Croak, music by John Weber and GarageBand. Our random fan shout-out this week goes to Bobby Fishkin. No reason, it's just random. Special thanks to Bob Goen and Marianne Curran, veterans of Entertainment Tonight and HGTV's Landscapers Challenged, but now of Warm 98 in Cincinnati, Ohio. And finally, thanks very much to you for listening. I'm Austin Titchener, 475 1425ths of the Reduced Shakespeare Company.
Christy is, my wife, is such a tremendous fan of you guys. And so it's like, okay, well, I got to go because I got to go talk to Austin. And she's like, what? My favorite comedy podcast is talking to my husband. Yeah.
This podcast is a production of the Reduced Shakespeare Company. Reducing expectations since 1981. Go to reducedshakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less. So much less. So much less. So much less.